the state of Maine's lakes. There are a lot of lakes in Maine. The number depends on how you define a lake, of course, but the recent issue of Down East magazine puts the number of lakes in Maine at 3,400. Some are remote and pretty wild. Others, like Moosehead and Sebago, attract throngs of tourists and day trippers every year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine's lakes are cherished for their pristine beauty and cleanliness, but face challenges, including invasive plants and fish, pollution from runoff and discharges, climate change, and new recreational sports. We'll discuss some of the efforts around the state to protect Maine's lakes and learn what all of us can do to protect this beloved resource. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Beyond their sheer beauty, Maine's lakes are wonderful places to fish, swim, or play. But the health of our lakes is at risk for a variety of reasons. We'll learn more about what these threats are and what individuals can do to protect Maine's beloved lakes. Joining me in the studio, Susan Gallo, who is Executive Director of Maine Lakes Society. Colin Holm is Executive Director of Lakes Environmental Association. And Scott Williams is Executive Director of Lake Stewards of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Is there a particular lake that you enjoy in Maine? Are you worried about changes to our lakes from climate change or pollution? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. Susan Gallo, I'm going to start with you. Doing research for today's program, I was trying to figure out how many lakes there are in Maine, and I came up with all sorts of numbers. The recent issue of Down East magazine puts it at 3,400. Is that about what you think?
Yeah, I think it, there's up to, as many as 6,000 if you count every little pond and in the state. But technically, it's lakes over 10 acres that are in the public domain. So we really think of those as our main lakes. They're the great ponds. And so there's different numbers, 2,500, 3,500, somewhere in between those two numbers is, I'm sure.
In any case, that's a lot.
There are a lot of lakes in Maine. We're very lucky.
Oh, my gosh. And overall, is the overall health of the lakes in Maine pretty good?
Well, I'll leave that to Scott when it's his turn to talk. there are certainly many, many lakes with very good health, and there's many with that have declining water quality and are facing a lot of problems. So you can't really make one statement for all the lakes in Maine. There's a lot of lakes in both categories.
All right. Well, we've got Scott's microphone hooked up now, and Scott, I'll bring you into the conversation. Overall health of the lakes of Maine, following up on what Susan was saying.
I agree with what Susan said. We here in Maine, we're very fortunate to have some of the clearest and cleanest lakes in the nation. So overall, our lakes are in very good health, and that has a lot to do with the fact that historically, as everyone knows, Maine is a cold state, so our lakes are covered with ice for up to half of the year. And our population density relative to a lot of other states is relatively low. And our soils in Maine are relatively infertile. And those three factors benefit Maine's lakes. They're relatively infertile. And another factor, I think, is that we have very good protective standards in place for our lakes. Maine's Department of Environmental Protection, which was formed back in the early 1970s, had a very strong lakes program, and we have some great ordinances to help protect our lakes. You don't have to go very far south to see a very noticeable difference in the quality of lakes, southern New England and certainly in the south and southwest.
All right. And Colin, bringing you into the conversation, talk to us about the ecological role lakes play. I mean, we all like them as a place to go swimming or fishing, but thinking as a naturalist, tell me about their role.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the base of the food chain, where there's the algae in the lakes, and they they provide the food for the zooplankton, and then zooplankton provide the food for the fish. And the fish are, unfortunately, a lot of people start thinking about lakes, and they think just about the bigger species like fish, and then the species that feed on fish like loons. And so I see a lot of signs, last name signs on trees with a picture of a loon or a picture of fish. But the lake's food chain starts with algae, and that's also that's something we need to be concerned about, because, as Scott mentioned, some of the lakes to the south of us aren't doing as well, and it's primarily because there's too much algae. So there's a delicate ecological balance that we're trying to maintain, where we have enough algae to maintain the food web in a stable state, but not too much algae that we start to see algae blooms, reductions in clarity, and property values that go along with that.
Okay, well, let's talk about algae and talk about climate change. How much do we know about how much Maine's lakes are warming, and how is that affecting algae and algae blooms in the lakes?
Well, globally, lakes from global studies are increasing in temperature about 0.3 degrees Celsius per decade. And then in New England, lakes have been increasing in temperature by about 0.5 degrees Celsius per decade. And the lakes that our organization covers in western Maine, we've seen even higher numbers, larger increases. And with that warmer temperature, we're going to see, obviously, a longer growing season, which is going to be more conducive to algae, particularly blue-green algae. And we're going to see a shorter period of ice out on the lakes, ice in.
Right. So the period in which there is not going to be ice is going to be longer. You're saying we are going to see, we do expect. Are you talking about what we expect in the future? Or are we already seeing more algae today?
I think that depends on what lake you're referring to. We're definitely seeing a shorter duration of ice cover. That's been documented well by multiple studies in Maine and New England. And some lakes in Maine are experiencing more algae, and there was a couple more algae blooms, lakes that experienced algae blooms last year. I think we're going to see more and more of that, but it's not universal. Some lakes are holding their own and quite stable.
All right, Susan Gallo.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that in addition to the warming water temperature, there's a whole host of other climate change impacts on lakes, like more intense storms, more frequent storms. And anytime you have a really intense rainstorm, and, you know, we had a lot of them, and we're trying to figure out how to document them from last summer, we overwhelm our stormwater drainage systems. We get these big flushes of runoff into the lake. And I think a lot of people just see runoff in a lake and don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I mean, maybe they think, oh, it's going to cloud my lake, but that runoff is going to carry a lot of nutrients. Every little piece of soil that runs into the lake has picked up some nutrients, particularly phosphorus, on its way there. So there are some big climate change impacts from that change in the weather pattern that are going to have a big impact on lakes.
So when you say, when we're talking about runoff, we're not just talking about the runoff of maybe like salt that was put on the streets, but agricultural fertilizer running into Maine's lakes.
Yeah, and really
sewage and septic.
That too, but even rainwater. Rainwater itself, when you get these big flushes, I mean, ideally you want rainwater to hit the ground, get absorbed into the ground, filtrate through the soil, and then maybe it makes its way into the lake. And that's the ideal sort of pattern. When you have rainwater hit the ground and go overland into the lake, that's even just plain rainwater without anything else in it, just by nature of running overland and going into the lake, is going to pick up nutrients. And then those things you mentioned, septic and agriculture, and even just regular old sort of lawn pesticides that people use to feed their lawn, that's all going to exacerbate the rainwater.
Over the years I've been a reporter in Maine, a lot of talk and a lot of worry about milfoil. Where are we in terms of efforts to combat milfoil and other invasive plants in Maine's lakes?
Well, I think we're doing pretty well. And for starters, again, Maine is kind of relatively low population density, and there historically have not been people traveling around the way they are these days. And the way that these species like milfoil spread from one lake to another is a result of people inadvertently picking up fragments of plants, and when they launch a boat or carry their fishing gear from one water body to another, there's the potential to introduce an invasive species in a lake where it hasn't occurred historically. We have a very strong program in Maine to engage the public, to make them aware of the threat of invasive species, and to make sure that they're taking great care when they move around from one water body to another, not to spread plants, or not just plants, but any organism that has not been in a lake historically. Our organization, we've trained something over 4,000 individuals during the past several years through our invasive plant program to be able to go out and recognize an aquatic invader and to be able to conduct a screening survey on their lakes so that if an unfortunate introduction has occurred, there's a chance that it may be caught early enough to be able to eradicate it, and if not eradicate, control it. So we're doing pretty well. Currently, less than 1% of our lakes in Maine are known to be infested with an aquatic invader. So relative to other states, that's a very low percentage.
Colin?
To build on what Scott was saying, I think if we want to look to the future, we can look to the states to our south that have a lot more invasive plants. And the only way we're going to change that future is by taking this problem a little bit more seriously than we are now. We do have a really great program. We had one of the first in the nation to with the invasive aquatic Maine River Lake and River sticker. But that funding has been stagnant since it started 17 years ago. There's actually a bill at legislature right now to increase that funding, LD 235, which was sponsored by Walter Reisman from Bridgeton, Harrison, Denmark. And that is talking about a $5 increase in the sticker fee on our boats that are registered in the state of Maine. And that funding is badly needed to deal with this issue. With the exception of Maine, the rest of New England has a lot of invasive plants. And if we don't start doing more control work and more inspection work and more assessment work, then we're going to follow shortly. And there's, besides funding, I think we also need to look at what other states are doing. Other states have mandatory inspections. There's 11 or 12 other states that are starting to do that, where these inspections are done by usually state staff, Park Service staff. You have to get your boat inspected when you come across the border or before you launch, or you need a little permit. They're taking this very seriously because there's a huge impact to the lake system from invasive plants, and it's not just on the ecological system, it's on the monetary system that these lakes contribute to. There's been studies at the University of Maine that show how property values greatly decrease once invasive plants get in there, and that's going to hurt a lot of rural economies.
Speaking of bills, Susan, I understand that there is a bill that has been signed into law dealing with septic systems in near Maine lakes just last month.
Yeah, on Earth Day, actually, the governor signed that bill. And yes, it will require inspections of septic systems in the shoreland zone throughout the state. So prior to this, there was a law in the books that required it in the coastal shoreland zones, and this bill just eliminated the word coastal from the books. And so anyone transferring property in the shoreland zone will need a septic inspection when they sell their house or transfer their ownership.
So this is if you're holding on to a family home, though, and not planning to sell it, there's not any kind of inspection law right now?
That is true. And, you know, there's a big issue with those older septic tanks. And at the testimony in front of the legislature a couple months ago, we heard from a lot of septic folks who talked about these old systems where people just put an oil drum in the ground and they put in some gravel, and That's where the septic, that is their septic right now in some of these old camps. And with the soils that we have, that's a really bad scenario for lake water quality.
Yeah, and when I'm hearing this, I'm sort of getting grossed out a little bit, to be honest with you. I mean, how do you know if a lake that you love is okay to swim in?
I'm not sure we have a good answer for this, but I don't, but maybe Scott does.
Well, I don't think we do have a good answer. And it's a question that we're often asked by members of the public, you know, is this lake safe to swim in? And our answer is typically, to the best of our knowledge, it is, unless there's a known issue that's been identified somewhere to alert people to a health risk.
And there are some lakes and some towns that do water testing, but this is sort of a town-by-town program, correct?
Well, our lakes are monitored pretty carefully for certain types of indicators of water quality. Doing bacteriological analysis to determine whether or not a specific area is safe to swim in is pretty tricky because, you know, even if there is a problem somewhere, somebody has a failing septic system or some other source of bacteria, once the organisms get into the water, through wind and wave action, things disperse very quickly. So it's very difficult to it can be very difficult to track down the actual source. So more often, if somebody has a failing septic system somewhere, chances are that either they know about it or someone else nearby knows about it, and then, you know, appropriate action can be taken to resolve the problem, hopefully.
To add on to that, Jennifer, I think what towns, you mentioned towns, and towns do do testing, some of them. But the testing that they do is generally at their beaches, and so they're looking for a possible E. coli, and those sources are mostly from people swimming there or dogs, but honestly probably mostly from swimmers. This summer, our organization is taking on a new program to do some assessment work for the impact of septic systems. And what we're doing is looking at the presence of optical brighteners around the lake using citizen scientists who are going to take samples, and then we're going to run it for optical brighteners. And that's optical brighteners are things you find in laundry detergent that whiten and brighten your fabrics. And so it's not their presence alone isn't an indication of bad water quality, but if they're in the lake, it's an indication that likely septic systems aren't working. And still, as Scott said, you're not going to be able to pinpoint and say, oh, this person's system is not working. But at least it will be able to quantify whether it is a problem and how much of a problem it is.
All right. Well, when we come back, I'm going to ask you all what we can all do to help ensure the quality of Maine's lakes. But first, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, also your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about Maine's lakes. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do BCM Environmental and Land Law of Northern New England, helping landowners, farmers, and governments problem solve. nhlandlaw.com. And Folia, in Portland's Old Port, where you'll find jewelry by Maine designers, as well as custom design and repair services. foliajewelry.com.
More than half a dozen states have adopted new restrictions on abortion in hopes the Supreme Court will revisit Roe v. Wade. Women who've had the procedure are speaking out.
I didn't know what I would do with the baby. I was horrified. I had no job. I would have been in no financial position to care for a kid.
The economics of ending a pregnancy. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's coming up later today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Radio would like to remind all teachers and educators that there is a valuable educational resource you may be interested in. Our PBS Learning Media Service contains extensive digital and classroom-ready resources. This free K-12 educational resource can be found online at mainepublic.org and is aligned with Common Core and national standards. PBS Learning Media, online at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about Maine's lakes. Joining me, Colin Holm, Executive Director of Lakes Environmental Association, Scott Williams, Executive Director of Lake Stewards of Maine, and Susan Gallo, Executive Director of the Maine Lakes Society. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Susan Gallo, what can we all do to protect the quality of Maine's precious lakes, even those of us who aren't lucky enough to have a camp on a lake?
Yeah, well, I'm going to start with the camp owners because that one of Maine Lakes core programs is a program called Lake Smart, which works with camp owners, people who own property on a lake, to reduce runoff and reduce pollution in order to protect water quality. So it's a program. It's voluntary. It's non-regulatory. We train volunteers who then go to meet with interested homeowners. They walk the property. They look at all the sources of runoff. They look at the septic. They look at the vegetative buffer, so the area of vegetation along the lake. And they do a score. And any homeowner that meets our standards, which are high enough that we hope that it's making an impact on water quality, they get a Lake Smart Award. So that's a great program to get involved with. And I guess the other thing, again, this is, I'll let other people tackle the non-homeowners. I think changing the way we all view lakeside property, like what is a good lakeside property, is something that we're striving for, and that's something the Lake Smart program does. Is that, and one of the big visual sort of indicators of a good lakeside property is that you really do want vegetation between your house and the lake. So, you know, there's a lot of historic camps and places where you see a bright green lawn all the way down to the water's edge or to the beach. And maybe some of us think that's really beautiful or pretty, but it's really not from a water quality standpoint. What we all need to do is just cross that right off of our sort of list of things that look beautiful and think about a lake with a 10 or 20 or 30 foot buffer of three layers with some trees, with some shrubs, with some undergrowth. You want blueberries. You know, blueberries are a great thing to plant as a buffer. So I think if we could all look at lake properties a little differently and think, oh, that is what looks really good when you can't see the house, when you have this deep buffer of vegetation between the house and the lake, because that's really helping filter that runoff and the rainwater and keep the lake clean.
Okay, Scott, your turn.
Well, what Lake Stewards of Maine is doing as an organization, we're the longest standing statewide citizen lake science program in the nation. We've been around since the early 1970s. And we engage the public. We train volunteers to assess the health of lakes by teaching them how to gather information about water quality, to teach them about invasive aquatic species, teach them how to go out into their lake watersheds and be able to identify specific issues that could be threatening their lakes. We currently have about 1,200 individuals who've been certified by our organization to gather this information throughout the state, currently gathering data on a little over 450 lakes statewide. And over time, we've accumulated, as a result of the public's involvement, a tremendous amount of information to help us understand lakes, to be able to better appreciate how what we perceive to be the threats are actually affecting them. And that data set is tremendously helpful to researchers. I was at a conference a short time ago where one of the speakers made a point of highlighting the work of volunteers in Maine and gathering long-term data on our lakes, which is really essential to most of the research that takes place to try to identify trends, identify any problems that we were not aware of. So that's what the Lake Stewards of Maine does. It consists of some wonderfully committed and passionate individuals, some of whom have been actively engaged for multiple decades.
All right, Colin?
Okay.
What would you add?
Well, I would. There's three quick things, and I think they build off of what Susan and Scott said. Number one is landowners can do a quick self-assessment during a heavy rainstorm of how the water is affecting their property. They can watch where channels form, where if roof runoff is piling up and washing away soil and going into the lake. You can see how your land is affecting the lake just by going out with a raincoat on and making assessment and then trying to get that water, that stormwater that's building up into the woods next time when once it stops raining by putting in simple best management practices like water bars, like infiltration trenches, by crowning your road, by leaving the vegetation along the water to let it filter. So that's the quick thing that people can do. I'd also expand out my second thing is to look beyond the shoreland zone, beyond right along the lakes, that heavily regulated area that people live in, and look to the upper watershed, because if we want to protect lakes in the long term, we got to look take a watershed perspective. And there's already been numerous studies that have shown that when you get less than 80% of the watershed is forested, you start to see a noticeable decline in water quality. And that's not a decline using equipment and complicating monitoring equipment. It's like noticeable to the human eye that the lake is more murky and more algae. And so we need to look to the upper watershed and do some of the same things that Susan was talking about, looking at making sure all the tributary streams and the ditches and the rivers and the wetlands that feed into this lake also have protective standards around the vegetation and the riparian areas around those areas. And I guess the last thing that people can do is they can join organizations like Lake Stewards of Maine and Maine Lake Society and Lakes Environmental Association. There are other associations and organizations across the state, but we're advocating for lakes. We're trying to help landowners fix issues on their own property. We're training people on how to do it right and how to monitor their lake, but we can only do it with support from the public.
Susan?
Yeah, I was just going to add one more action that popped into my head is regarding boaters, and I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of differing opinions out there about, you know, boats and the values of boats. Maine Lakes supports boating for sure as an excellent way to use lakes and enjoy lakes, but there is an impact on water quality for big boats that are in areas that are too shallow and big boats that are creating wakes too close to shore. So Maine does have a 200-foot no wake zone, where you are, if you're within 200 feet of the shore, you're supposed to slow down enough so that you don't have so that your wake isn't washing up on shore and creating that erosion on the shore. And if you ever watch a video of sort of a motorboat, even a small motorboat in a very shallow area, there's a big impact on the bottom of the lake when the motor starts, and in terms of bringing up the bottom sediments and pulling up all the plants from the water swirling around. So we love boats, but we want them in the right places. And, you know, the bigger the boat is, the deeper the water needs to be and the further away from shore.
We'll go to Joanne, who's calling from Monmouth. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to mention how important the work that you guys are doing is. We live in Monmouth. We live on the Anabescook Lake, and we're year-round residents, and we are really passionate about belonging to the local organizations, ALIA, our Anabescook Lake Improvement Association. We do the loon count every year. We are involved with the Cobbessee Watershed District and the Friends of Cobbessee. And all these people together work on the milfoil. You know, we have so many volunteers that are willing to go out and look for the plants and mark them. And then the guys from New England milfoil come out and do the mitigation. You know, they have volunteer boat inspections. We are seasonal business owners. We welcome people out on the island in the middle of the lake. And we're Maine guides, so all this is critical to our financial stability and just the way of life that we happen to live here in Maine and how lucky we are to be here. So thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thank you, Joanne. We'll move on to Katie, who's calling from Orland. Hi, Katie. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, just like the previous caller, I just wanted to stress the importance of the local organizations that are members of the Maine Lake Society and the Lake Stewards of Maine and LEA, and how important the associations are in engaging the property owners, reaching out to community members as well, and educating the public in general about the importance of all these various programs that the previous caller mentioned. And so my husband and I are year-round residents on Alamoosuc and are trained and certified with the water quality monitoring. And We are beginning up our first courtesy boat inspection, or renewing a courtesy boat inspection on the lake this summer, and we started an invasive plant, also native plant survey work last year. So it's just very important, and it's easy enough to get. If your lake has an association, it's on the Maine Lake Society website, I believe, and the Lake Stewards website.
Katie, thanks for your call. Yeah. I'm going to go to a Facebook post from Marty. He says, there is a lot of activity on Maine lakes in the winter, not just in the summer. What is being done to study the impacts and opportunities of wintertime lake activity?
I think that's a great question, and it's traditionally been understudied. Lakes in the winter.
That's right.
Well, compared to the summer. I mean, it's a lot happens in the summer, and the summer is when you're worried about, particularly August, you're worried about July and August algae blooms. But lakes don't disappear in the winter. A lot of the people go away, but there's still things are happening. And in the past couple of years, our organization has started a winter monitoring program looking at oxygen, temperature, algae, turbidity underneath the ice cover. And we're getting a huge amount of new information. There's a lot of algae that can grow under several feet of snow still underneath the ice. And it's one of the things that we're very interested in looking into more deeply out of our Maine Lakes Science Center, which is one of our new big initiatives, and studying winter dynamics. And something that Scott touched on, I think, earlier, and Susan as well, is the storm events, we're getting more precipitation and more precipitation in the winter, and that's a bad time for a heavy rain event to come in, because there's no vegetation isn't absorbing it, and so it's washing away, and it can be bringing in a huge nutrient load to our lakes essentially when no one's looking.
Sure. So if we're getting a big rainstorm when the ground has started to freeze, bad combination.
Exactly. And we're going to see a lot more of those, and we need to understand how they impact. So I think as technology improves, we're going to see more testing programs grow in the winter.
A tweet from Neil: is there property tax breaks for landowners who are awarded a Lake Smart Award?
There are not at the moment. There are not. It would be a great idea to have one as an incentive. We would love to look into that further.
An email from Dree. So when landlords and commercial businesses apply pesticides around the perimeter of their buildings within a couple hundred yards of a lake or pond, and then it rains as it does, well, it seems to me the stuff is going to run into the water body. There was a report out last month that 1 million species globally are at risk of extinction, and pesticides were one of the many reasons why. I believe these practices done locally are extremely short-sighted and must change. There are better alternatives. What kind of laws are on the books about pesticides near lakeshores?
Not many.
Exactly.
In fact, that's an area that is seriously understudied, the potential for pesticides. You know, we mostly have concerned ourselves with nutrients. I'm not sure that we've mentioned the nutrient phosphorus, but it is phosphorus that is typically driving most of the algae growth in lakes. But, you know, in the discussion that we've had here about stormwater runoff, which is the mechanism by which pollutants are transported down through lake watersheds into streams or that run into the lakes or directly into the lake, it's not just the nutrients. It's not just the soil that's washing away. It's anything along the way that happens to can be washed into the runoff. So widespread pesticide usage, which is largely underregulated, has not been studied very carefully. And from what we've seen in some marine studies that have suggested that pesticide concentrations and all sorts of other things that are getting into stormwater runoff, how that has affected marine systems, there's no reason to believe that that's not the case for lakes as well.
An email from Michael: our lake has had a dam since at least the 1980s and maybe earlier. What is the long-term impact on a lake's water quality to have a dam at the outlet that reduces the rate of outflow?
Well, as I'm sure Scott can speak to this a little more, but in most of the lakes in the area that we cover, and we cover about 41 lakes directly, most of them have dams, And but they were put in 100, 150, some of them even close to 200 years ago at some point. And, you know, they're going to increase the volume of the water in the lake, and more volume is going to can mean there's more a dilution to the amount of sediment and nutrients coming in. I think whenever you change the water level drastically, that's when you can have shorefront erosion, and that's going to increase your nutrients. But if the dam has been in for 100, 150 years, it's probably reverting to a pretty stable state.
Susan?
Yeah, there's been some work done on mercury in main lakes, and main lakes do tend to have higher levels of mercury. They don't impact people, but they impact loons, and they impact fish, and mercury moves up the food chain and can accumulate in loons, and we've seen impacts on loons from mercury. But one of the big causes of mercury, increased levels of mercury in lakes, are lakes where the dam is controlled and there are drastic fluctuations, especially drop downs of water levels in the fall that leaves the algae and green plants on the shore. They dry out on the shore, and that's how they methylize, and that's how the mercury becomes active. On a small old dam that doesn't really change too much, maybe has a couple of boards that somebody, the town or somebody, changes once in a while, is much, from a mercury perspective, is much different than sort of the bigger power producing dams we have, where we see these big drawdowns and then these big fill ups and then a drawdown. And that, there's an impact on the ecology of those lakes because of this change in mercury.
Is Scott, something you want to add to that?
Only that I think, as Colin alluded to and Susan, maintaining a stable water level over time is in the best interest of lakes, and that's a lot easier said than done. Not all impounded lakes, dams have the capability of regulating water level over time, and even if you do, you're always second guessing Mother Nature, because you never know what the weather is going to be like, a few weeks or a few months down the line. So it's a tricky business, but the best practice, if it's possible, is to minimize the fluctuations that occur over a period of time.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We are talking about lakes in Maine. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the law offices of Joe Bornstein. Maine lawyers committed to working for Maine people since 1974. Learn more at joebornstein.com. And Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Coming soon from Safe Space Radio, a special program for Mental Health Awareness Month. Many white parents don't know how to talk to their kids about race and racism.
There are an awful lot of white people who I think are well-intended, who fundamentally do think that it's racist to even notice race.
Join us for stories about when and how to talk to white kids of all ages. Talking to White Kids About Race and Racism, a new program for Mental Health Awareness Month from Safe Space Radio.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Thinking about donating your used vehicle to Maine Public? Doing so during May or June is a good time. Not only will it be towed away for free and you could get a possible tax credit, but also during May and June, our friends at Lee Auto Malls will provide a $500 Lee certificate for use towards the purchase of any new or used vehicle at any Lee Auto Malls location around the state. For complete information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the banner, or click on the events drop-down. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what can be done to protect our lakes? Joining me, Scott Williams with the Lake Stewards of Maine, Susan Gallo with the Maine Lakes Society, and Colin Holmes with Lakes Environmental Association. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Going to Peter, calling from Belgrade Lakes. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'd just like to compliment you on your panel today. You had three of the top lake people in the state. I work with all of them, and they're all top-notch. I just wanted to amplify a couple of things. One, I want to correct something that Susan said about mercury not having an effect on people. There is, in fact, a mercury consumption advisory put out by IF&W on freshwater fish from Maine lakes that pregnant women and children under 10 shouldn't eat any, and most others have to regulate depending on the type and size and some things. But it is a serious problem, and it's really an air pollution problem. And the clean power plant rules and things like that are extremely important for regulating mercury. The second thing I wanted to hit on was something that Colin and Scott were talking about, the increasing temperatures due to runoff and effects of the lakes. But an insidious issue of that is that Maine's lakes are only really oxygenated twice a year at the spring and fall turnover. Once the ice goes on and once it sets up with strong stratification in the summer, you start losing oxygen at depth. And when that happens, we are seeing more and more and more depletion of oxygen in the deeper parts of the lakes, and that has an effect on the fish species, especially cold water fish like salmonids and the like. I serve on the board of a group called the Seven Lakes Alliance, and we have a strong, it's similar to Collins LEA. We do the Seven Lakes in the Belgrade region, and we sample the oxygen, and we're seeing much, and we're very concerned about that, and that's something that we're working on.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for calling and joining in the conversation. I want to follow up on something we were talking about earlier, looking at climate change and the change in temperature in Maine lakes. And we were also talking about invasives, Scott. Is there more of a risk of invasive species as the temperature of the lakes warm?
There absolutely is. There have been studies done at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and the University of New Hampshire, indicating that as lake temperatures rise, many of the species, invasive species that exist in other parts of the country that are not in Maine lakes, they're not here primarily because the lakes are too cool, too cold. And as they warm, many, many additional species are likely to find suitable habitat in our lakes. So that certainly is another effect of very negative effect of climate change, and that also goes to the point that Peter was just making about oxygen loss. As our lakes become warmer, they're capable of holding less oxygen, and there's a projection nationwide regarding the loss of cold water fishery habitat that's likely to occur as a result of climate change, and it's really quite devastating. A very significant percentage of the total cold water fishery habitat in the state of Maine could be gone in 50 years' time.
We have an email from Ed. How can we get all the sea-run fish up into the lakes and their rivers? The fish bring nutrients and take away bad chemicals. Many streams and lakes have had dams on them since the 1760s. There is no green hydroelectric power unless there is full volitional ability of fish to pass up and down through the rivers to the lakes. Our lakes are the nurseries for the alewives, the main feed fish for almost everything in the Gulf of Maine, and for eels, the second highest money fishery in Maine. Hydroelectric turbines destroy these fish on the way back down to the ocean or totally prevent them from getting to our lakes. Where we are on Graham Lake, the 70-foot Ellsworth Dam has been stopping fish since its construction in 1908. That's 111 years. Let the fish pass to keep our lake healthy.
Yeah, there's a lot of great work going on in Maine, and Maine Rivers is an organization that's working really hard on dam removals and finding funding to remove dams and put in fishways. And we, from a lake perspective, that's a great thing to do.
All right, a tweet. Do Poland Springs operations negatively affect the water quality or longevity of Maine lakes? Do we know?
I don't think we know.
No, I don't think we do know that.
All right. We'll go to Laura calling from the Belgrade Lakes. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi, Jennifer.
Go ahead.
Thanks very much for taking my call. All of the issues that your panelists are raising are great things for everyone in Maine to pay attention to. It's hard to drive anywhere in Maine and not see how beautiful and how much our lakes contribute to our state. Here in the Belgrade Lakes, you know, we're less than 20 miles from Augusta. We have the luxury of having a watershed that is impacted by a lot of activity, but also a longstanding ethic of people really paying attention to these issues. Seven Lakes Alliance, which is the organization that I'm with, does everything from pulling milfoil to keep that from spreading to other places. Running youth conservation corps programs, teaching our youth both best management practices for conservation and also, you know, real on the ground, you know, addressing erosion problems on the ground. But bottom line is that it really takes everyone at all levels. We have federal partners, wonderful people in the state who are working on all of these issues. Our local towns contribute much-needed dollars to help us do all of this work. And individuals, so many individuals who take action and help their neighbors understand how important all of this work is. So thanks very much for covering the topic. And I guess I would say that paying attention to the land is something that we overlook. Colin said earlier, we've got to look all the way up rivers to the headwaters and the streams that impact the waters downstream. And the land and water are connected. That's why we try to view the system as a watershed. So I really appreciate the chance to thank your panelists and you for shining a light on this topic.
Sure. Thank you, Laura. We have an email from David. Maine lakes often function as public water supplies. The largest such facility is the Sebago Watershed, which provides clean drinking water to some 200,000 people in the Portland area. This means that not only does Sebago have to remain safe for public consumption, but that a whole network of rivers and lakes that feed Sebago must be managed to provide pure water to the lake. So the area of critical watershed encompasses Sebago plus feeders north into Oxford County. There are major public health issues surrounding this subject, which you should be emphasizing. So there we go. David is pointing out that there's more to this than recreation and wildlife. There's public health.
Absolutely. Our organization works in the Upper Sebago Lake watershed, and it goes well past. Well, it goes up into from Sebago Lake itself up into Bethel, and you have to look at the whole watershed is feeding Sebago, and the same with all lakes in Maine, looking at the whole watershed. But I think what the meat of the question is the health effects, and We've talked a little bit today about blue-green algae, the cyanobacteria is their actual name, that will likely increase with climate change and are increasing on some of Maine lakes today. And with those cyanobacteria, there are health risks for liver function, for your gastrointestinal system, for your nervous system, for your skin. And some of those risks are quite big, and there's been correlations with increased ALS, with around lakes that have algae blooms in parts of New England, particularly New Hampshire. We're still trying to figure out that. There's been a lot of research on that. It's a terrible, terrible disease, debilitating disease. But just algae blooms, you can wildlife, livestock, people's pets, it affects them all, and including humans. So when we have these algae blooms, something we're all concerned about, and that's why we're working so hard to try to stop them.
Scott.
And, you know, the types of algae that are likely to be the primary component of blooms in the changing climate scenario are likely to be the ones that are more associated with the toxins that Colin was referring to. The blue-green algae or cyanobacteria are more likely to be the bloomers with warming climate conditions.
We'll go to Beattie calling from Turner. Beattie, if you could be quick, that would be great.
I will. Thanks, Jennifer, and thank you, Scott. Scott, I think you know my wife, Lee Breidenbach, from our work at Roxbury Pond. We're now on Bear Pond in Turner, and active members of BPIA, so I'd reinforce the earlier caller that said get involved with your local lakes association. My question is a simple one. You were talking about the varying levels in the lake with dam control, and it's my understanding that we're required to increase the flow out of our dam during the winter months. Can you speak to that?
I don't think anybody can hear specifically, but those dam, you know, the permit, the operation sort of guidance for dams is really specific by town and by owner. So I can't really speak to a specific dam, but I know that you all have guidelines that you have to follow.
Beatty, thanks for your call. Kent in Portland. And again, Kent, if you could be quick, that would be great.
I'll try. I'm from Portland. We're buying a camp in Winslow on Paddy Pond, literally closing tomorrow. Wondered if the guests would like to comment either on Paddy Pond, or I did a little research and realized that Colby College did an analysis probably 15 years ago and turned the pond from an algae muck that you could barely swim into a beautiful pond now. And I wonder if anybody would like to comment on that.
Anybody know about that project?
No, I don't, but I know that Lake Stewards of Maine has a great website called Lakes of Maine that if you go on and you search for Paddy Pond, you can find all kinds of historical data and water quality data. And so that's a great resource.
Okay, and we'll link that onto our Facebook page. Thanks for the question, Kent. We are almost out of time, but Susan, I wanted to ask you about the conference coming up next month. Who's invited and what are you going to cover and when is it?
Yes, everyone is invited. We would love to see anyone who cares about lakes, wants to learn more. It's on June 22nd. It's a Saturday. It's all day at the University of Maine in Farmington. We have a great array of speakers lined up. If you want to know, you know, anything more about what we talked about on the show today, we have Dave Roque, the Maine soil scientist, will be talking about septic tanks. We have Roberta Hill from the Lake Stewards will be coming and talking about a new app that they've developed to identify flora and fauna in your lake. We'll have people speaking about some great new technology that's out there using drones to monitor algae, using a lakeside DNA sampling technique with your smartphone that'll help lake associations identify specific kinds of algae that might be in their lake. So there's just and learn a lot more about Lake Smart. We'll have a whole Lake Smart track. So there are just tons of opportunities to learn more and to network with other lake enthusiasts. So please go to mainlakesociety.org and you can get more information there.
And we'll put links to all of this on our webpage and our Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. The voice you just heard, Susan Gallo, the Executive Director of Maine Lakes Society. Colin Holm is here, Executive Director of Lakes Environmental Association, and Scott Williams, Executive Director of Lake Stewards of Maine. Today's show was part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics relating to climate change. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Olivia Peruk took your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.